Welcome to this afternoon's meditation session. Once again, if any of you are here for the first time for the introduction to meditation class that is being held in the door to my right, just as you go to the reception area on the door which is just next to this room. In this session we usually meditate for about 45 minutes, although I like to not to make too much of time. I know that some people ask the question, how long should you meditate for? And it's a question which doesn't really make too much sense to me, because when you let go of the measuring of time by abandoning all perception of the past and the future, the time loses its meaning. And when time loses its meaning, is one of the burdens of life is extinguished. And that burden is just counting the minutes, waiting for something to happen, or fearing it's happening, or just lingering and carrying around whatever happened in the past. It's amazing just how we fill the space of our mind with things which don't really belong there. We fill it with the memories, events of the past, and even though they're just memories and they're very far from the truth, as every psychologist would know, that you look in the past and what you see is not really what's there. It's just what you choose to pick and choose from the supermarket shelves of past experiences. Most is left up there on the shelves, and you just pick what you're in the mood to pick. If you're in a bad mood, you pick up all the negative experiences of the past. If you're in a good mood, which is less likely or less common, then you pick up all the mistakes. And as such, both. So if you're in a good mood, so you pick up all the beautiful stuff. But whatever, the whole lot is not worth picking up at all. Because we're filling up this present moment with stuff which doesn't belong there. And if the purpose of meditation is to empty the mind, to free it, to liberate it from the burden of possessions, and I mean here possessing the future or possessing the past, it becomes a perception which we develop of letting go of all past and all future, and just staying in this moment. And experience the emptiness of this moment. In emptiness is freedom. There's no walls, there's no barriers, there's no things which hedges in. The events of the past usually hedges in with the emotions which are accompanied by those experiences. And even the future has its emotional barriers of fear or anticipation, worry, whatever. But in the present moment there's this great sense of freedom. It's the emptiness perception which develops a sense of freedom. Which is why that in one of the great teachings of the Buddha on the meditation on emptiness, the Buddha was describing the same type of meditation path, but just with a slightly different series of perceptions. It's actually noticing what the mind is empty of, what it's free of. Noticing that. And he says in that first stage, you're empty of the perception of time. And that's your definition of emptiness there. As you go deeper into the stillness, you soon become empty of the perception of the inner conversation, the chatter, the thinking mind. And you notice that emptiness. In the same way that you can go out into the bush and just see the space all around you and become percipient of that space. The whole object is the emptiness. We can go into a very, very quiet place in the world. And what you notice most about it is the silence. These things are bona fide objects which the mind can focus on. And noticing the emptiness is something which inspires, which leads inwards, which produces this stillness of the mind. And so we can notice in these stages of meditation, now the mind is empty of thought. As you go deeper into the breath, now the mind is empty of the perception of diversity. And diversity means you're focusing on more than one thing. There's many things going on. Sounds, feelings, thoughts. But when you're just watching the breath, that's all you're focusing on. Just the breath happening in this moment. Breath going in or breath going out. To be able to focus on that is very difficult to just turn the mind immediately onto the breath. What's most important is to give a preparation, first of all, of the emptiness of time, the emptiness of the inner chatter, and then the emptiness of diversity. So you're just on one thing, just the breath. Having prepared the mind, it's much easier to watch the breath. For many years now I've taught those two initial stages of present moment awareness and silence, simply because that too many people went onto the breath immediately when they started meditating, and the only way they could hold it was through force. Sometimes they could succeed in watching the breath, but could take it no further, simply because they never started in the correct place. We're teaching a bit of letting go of time, letting go of the inner conversation, means that when they do watch the breath, they are ready and they can hold it with hardly any effort. In meditation, it's not so much that you hold these meditation objects like the breath. The ideal is for the breath to hold you. For the perception of the emptiness from all other things that you only have the breath to deal with is a type of simplicity which is very, very full of ease and happiness. Because we live such complicated lives, we have to deal with so many things in just 1 hour, let alone one day. The idea of just focusing on one thing and one thing alone for such a long period of time, it's like going on a holiday, it's like a relief. It's just the beauty, the ease of simplicity. So once one gets into the breath, one knows the absence of all these other things one usually has to deal with. The absence of mobile phones, the absence of having to talk, the absence of having to make decisions, the absence of having to clean, to cook, to work, whatever. All you have to care about, to deal with, is just this little breath happening now. It's also, in a more refined sense, that we have these six senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, physical touch, and the mind. And now four of those senses have been just completely shut off. All we have is physical touch and the mind. It's a simile which I've used. It's like having six telephones on the desk of your office. And now you take four telephones and disconnect them. It just makes life more simple, more calm, more free, more peaceful. You're disconnecting sight. You're disconnecting sound, smell and taste. Until all you have left is touch and mind. And even the physical touch, you're just focusing on one small area of physical touch, which is the feeling of breath going in, the feeling of breath going out. Once you get to that stage, you're just watching the breath going in and going out, and you're reasonably in the moment. You're reasonably silent inside, so there's not a counter train of thought going on. You're not watching the breath with half of your mind and the other half of the mind planning your evening this Saturday. You're just fully with the breath and nothing else is there. When you've got that type of awareness of your breathing, then just appreciate the simplicity. Develop the perception that you are empty of so many things which are disturbances, which are burdens. You're not just free of the past, free of the future, free of thought. You're free of the body. You're free of your duties, you're free of your work, you're even free of your age. Everything has disappeared, and the only thing which you are nurturing is the awareness of a breath. And even just many breaths, they're just discarded. You're just aware of just one breath happening now. That's the only thing which you are watching, which you are nurturing, which you value, which is important to you. It is giving this one breath value. It's such a simple object, it has a very profound effect on your mind. What it does is the mind can focus and feel at ease, becomes unburdened, and it just recharges its batteries. Instead of having to do so many things, it has just a very simple light object to carry. Just this one breath happening now. And in that simplicity, there always comes a joy, the peace, the freedom of just being with the breath. Somebody asked me this afternoon about, do you remember the first time you meditated? And it's one of those questions I've been asked before. And I straight away said yes. The very first time I meditated, I remember the place and time. It was in the Wordsworth room of King's College in Cambridge. The first time I meditated, just watching the breath, I felt peaceful. Not deeply peaceful, but peaceful enough in that simple 5 minutes, and that was all, to know that, yeah, this is something which is enjoyable, which is profound, which is leading me to somewhere I really want to go, to the peace, the stillness, and the freedom of the mind. I remember that. And it was the meditation which drew me in. And if you can develop enough of that sense of peace and stillness and freedom, that the breath draws you into it, so no longer do you have to exert effort and force to keep your mind on the breath. It is the mind, or rather, sorry, it is the breath which keeps your attention on it. The breath brings you in. And when the breath starts to attract you, you can let go more and more and more of the controller within. And as the breath grabs your attention, as the beauty of the breath keeps your mindfulness there, you automatically let go more and more. And in that letting go, the meditation deepens naturally. It becomes more effortless, more beautiful, more free, more still. Remember, it's the effort, the controller and the doer, which disturbed the mind in the first place. It was that which caused the diversity, the trouble, and all the restlessness. As that starts to subside, as the doer stops, stillness grows, and the energy, the power of mindfulness, comes as a direct result of sustaining stillness. The stillness becomes so attractive, it holds you. It's not that you hold the stillness holds your mind. And that is the path into deeper and deeper states of meditation. You truly become the passenger, not the driver. You just stand back and watch, in awe, enjoying, still, peace, as you go into the deeper levels of meditation. This is what the meditation is all about. Empty, first of all, of time. Empty of the inner conversation. Empty of the doer. So empty of everything other than the breath. And lastly, empty of the doer, of the will, of the controller, as you completely let go. That's the path of meditation. So having given that overview of meditation to you, emphasizing a perception of emptiness to give you a bit more happiness in the meditation, now is the time to begin. So for those of you who have been sitting a long time, you want to just quickly adjust your posture, please do so. Those of you who are comfortable, as you are, just stay. So here we go. So once again, for those of you who came in a bit late, who wanted to come for the introduction to meditation class, that is occurring in the room to my right. Here we're going to now sit for 45 minutes. So when your eyes are closed, it's always advisable to spend a few minutes being aware of your physical body, checking out the sensations, asking your body if it's comfortable. Don't be careless, but care more about your body now. If you want to adjust this position, please do so. You have to maintain this posture for 45 minutes. If you set it up properly to begin with, you will have fewer distractions. And sometimes bodily distractions can just stand in the way of deep states of peace and freedom. So get the body right, first of all. When the body is well set up, maybe just to check what I still consider to be the most important part of the posture, what's happening on your face. If the face is screwed up, as if you're gritting your teeth, then that's never going to lead to peaceful meditation. Check the features of your face are relaxed. And even better, make a smile. It's very simple psychology, but a little smile on the face, as if you're posing for a camera, will bring a sense of happiness to the mind. I remember when I was not on the big time rowing on an 8 on the river in Cambridge, I was struggling so hard to pull that oar when the coach shouted to smile instead of grimacing. I remember just changing the countenance of my face to a smile, and the oar was easier to pull. You make it difficult for yourself if you don't attend to the features of your face when you're meditating. A little smile has an enormous effect. And then focus in the moment. Don't know how busy you are, how many responsibilities you have. Now's the time to put them all aside. Letting go of all the past. Not interested in the future, but valuing only this moment. This is the only thing which counts now. This is why I'm here, to meditate in the moment, spend the rest of my life planning and figuring out what happened. Now, I'm now, just in the moment, in the precious present. Notice if the mind is empty of the perception of past and future, and thereby empty of the perception of time. Focus awareness on the silence. So in the moment there is no inner sound of a commentary. So the inner speech is calmed into emptiness.
go of diversity, to focus on just this breath happening now, allowing the breath to become so peaceful, you don't need to hold the breath. The experience, the feeling of breath, holds you. getting close to the end of another meditation period. Time to pause with one's mindfulness to look at the state of one's mind and body, to start to experience peace, inner happiness and freedom as a personal experience rather than just as an idea. To compare this moment with when you started today, 45 minutes ago. To see how this meditation works. I'll now ring the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, it's time to come out of the meditation. It's usually after a meditation, sees things and from a different perspective. Sometimes that one of the advantages and side effects of meditation is actually stop the mind always looking in one direction. Sometimes that our mind is in a particular mood, it's obsessed with a particular thing, and it keeps thinking in one track, in one direction. It's hard to stop that mind which is just always looking in one direction. But when we meditate, we completely let go. It means when we emerge from our meditation, we can break those habits of thoughts, those trains of emotions, those ways of looking which hinder us from seeing the bigger picture. When we meditate and we drop things for a while, when we have that freedom, on emerging we can see a wider perspective, and those little irritations which caused us so much problems, which took up so much mind space, are seen for what they really are, just minor little things, hardly worth talking about. It is from meditation that I develop the simile of how big the hand is, and when you are obsessed with a problem, it's as if you're holding your hand right in front of your eyes. The hand is so big, you can't see anything else in the whole universe except your hand. It's not the hand's fault, it's just it's in the wrong place. You haven't got any perspective. Sometimes that's what it's like when you start meditating. The problem is right in front of you, too close so you can't see the big picture. You find after you emerge from meditation, the hand has gone back to its usual place at the end of your arm. You can see your hand, but you can also see the rest of the world. And you realize it's not such a big problem after all. That problem can be a cancer, can be a disappointment, can be a frustration or things going wrong. Praise and blame, all of those things. When we hold them too close, we can't see anything else. we put them in the right perspective, they're not such a big deal anymore. So this is how we can actually learn to put our hand where it belongs, how we can gain perspective on the problems of our lives, to be able to let them go for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, however long you have, and afterwards you open your eyes at the end of the meditation, and you can see with a better perspective. Instead of obsession, one has got perspective. It's called wisdom, seeing things as they truly are, not seeing things as they seem, but as they truly are. That's a sign of wisdom. So, has anyone got any comments or questions about the meditation day? Yes. My nonsense. Maybe bring my nonsense, yes. No, if you had to lose one of the senses, obviously that in my meditation I deliberately lose five of my senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. So you deliberately do that until you get no sense except the mind sense. And you know that old story about, I remember reading Aristotle, and in Aristotle he mentions six senses, whereas these days in Western society, Western culture is only five senses. It's been a great thing to actually to find out where on earth, at what time in our history, we actually dropped that sixth sense. Because we always say that, you know, Western culture or philosophy came from the Greeks, and the Greeks always had six senses. Aristotle talked about the mind, and he called the mind the common sense, simply because the mind can see what the eye sees, can hear what the ear hears. You can know all of the five senses. And that's why I, as a joke, just make the observation that somewhere in the 2,000 years of European culture, somehow along the line, those years, we lost our common sense, we lost our mind. In other words, he just went back to five senses instead of the sixth. The sixth is the most important. The mind is the chief. It's the most important sense of all. And I don't know if you've, the last time you read my book, but there's a story in there which answers a question which somebody asked in a letter to me a few days ago about where is this mind? Is the mind live in your, between your ears, or is it in your heart? Where does the mind live? And it's the story of the biggest thing in the world. When a friend, he's an old friend from my student days, always keep in touch. His daughter was in grade one, year one of primary school, and teacher asked the question, class, what is the biggest thing in the world? And when one little girl put their hand up and said, my daddy. Another one put their hand up and said, elephant. Another one put their hand up and said, a mountain. And the daughter of my friend put up her hand and said, my eye is the biggest thing in the world. What do you mean, your eye is the biggest thing in the world? Asked the teacher. And this little six-year-old genius said, well, my eye can see her daddy. My eye can see an elephant. My eye can see a mountain and so much more. If all of that can fit into my eye, my eye must be the biggest thing in the world. What a great argument for a six-year-old. You can somehow see things which we just pass over. And I just took that a little bit further, because the mind is even bigger than the eye. The mind can see everything your eye will ever observe, and it can see things you'll never see in your imagination. It can also hear, feel. In fact, everything that you will ever know can fit into your mind. Therefore, the mind is the biggest thing in the world. It contains everything, because everything you can ever know, perceive, cognize, can fit into your mind. So it's not as if your mind is in your brain. Your brain, your body, your world is in your mind. And those of you who believe in a God, it's not the mind is in God. If you believe in a God, God is in your mind. The mind is still bigger than everything. Everything you can know and perceive and believe in can fit into your mind. It's a great argument, and no one's ever come across a counter argument to argue against that. All from the little kid's observation when she was six. Brilliant piece of deductive thinking. Yeah. Yes. Well, it's most of the time that you're doing the right thing. If ever you're really wired, very restless, thinking about lots of things, the dullness or the spaciness is far preferable. And sometimes all you need to do is hang out in that spaciness for a while. Because it cannot last as a spaciness of the doziness unless you are stopping the energy flowing back into where it's supposed to be going, into the awareness. It's the insight or the paradigm which answers that question, is to know the reason why you get spacey or tired or dull was because you've been using all your mind energy in that sort of wide, restless, thinky, worry state. And basically you're out of gas. And actually to refill your tank, its stillness refills it. It's a saying of my teacher Ajahn Chah, that you get physical energy through exercise, but you get mental energy through stillness. Stillness of the mind. So imagine just you've been working, striving to get by in this world, or just getting here, doing so much, of course you're going to be tired. You've run out of gas. So just stay in that spacey state for a while. After a while, energy starts to come back. Comes back into mindfulness. And the mind just wakes up by itself. Even if you didn't focus on parts of the body, the energy will come back. And that's what I do if I'm ever tired. Just sit there and just be with tiredness. I don't struggle at all. I just train myself just to be with the tiredness and not complain. Not have that fault-finding mind, but just to make peace with it. To have this passive awareness as best I can. It's not a very clear awareness, but at least I'm passive. And because I'm not wasting any energy in controlling, trying to get rid of, judging, in any type of negativity or craving, I just wait. And just like the mist clearing in the early morning when the sun comes out, it clears slowly. But soon, all that mist is gone, and the mind is bright. But it's also still. So I can look upon, usually straight onto the breath, and the breath is just there. Crisp attention. You need to energize mindfulness. Keep everything still. Let go of the doing mind. However,
I know that some people, we do things, we are control freaks. And so in the beginning of the meditation, you can just move the focus if you wish to. It disturbs the meditation a little bit, but not too much at the beginning. You can decide to focus on a part of the body, or decide to focus on the breath, and even put a little bit of effort there. But not when you get deep in meditation. When you get the breath is just there. Please don't put any effort in there at all. Your job is just to be passively aware and let the process happen. Every time you try and choose the next object or move the attention to this focus or that focus, you are actually delaying and disturbing the whole process of meditation. I think I did mention that in the guidance during the meditation. The best meditation happens when you don't focus your awareness on the object, but the object draws you to it. And the object looks so attractive. Like, you know, like a pretty girl walking down the street and all the boys sort of turn their attention there. Or this, you know, this amazing sort of display in a shop window, and everyone goes to see it. Whatever it is which draws your attention, so it becomes passive. And usually what draws people's attention is an object of beauty and delight. So once the meditation starts to become delightful, and the breath becomes beautiful, this is one of the things I was saying in the meditation, as you do see, sorry, to experience the beauty of the meditation, by focusing on all these negative things which have been taken away. The fact you don't have to work, you don't have to speak, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to live up to some demand or pass some test. You're completely free. And just you enjoy that freedom, because you appreciate it, you don't take it for granted. And then when you see the beauty in just being with the breath, that's all you need to do. I live a very busy life, got many responsibilities, and it's great. When I'm watching the breath, I've got nothing else to do. Oh, what freedom. I'm not an abbot, spiritual director, I've got no disciples when I watch my breath. So it's time out. Wow, this is great. And appreciating the breath like that, the breath draws me in. I don't have to force my mind. I don't have to tell it, watch the breath, come, watch it at the beginning, watch it in the middle, watch it at the end, come on, get your act together. It becomes a natural, the breath drawing me in. Once that whole process starts, because I'm not putting effort in, the energy of the object goes into the object starts to become so beautiful, I don't have to put any effort whatsoever. You're just in this journey, watching this beautiful process. Of the breath getting ever more delightful, subtle, till it disappears. But when it disappears, it's just so beautiful. This is how we meditate. It draws you in. You don't push it. So it's not coming from you, from a self, from a me. You are disappearing. As I said this morning to the 8 preceptors, there's a little saying I've been repeating in the monastery in the last few months. The saying from the Visuddhimagga, which says, the path is, but no traveller on it is seen. This is not a Zen text, this is Theravada text. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Which means, whenever there's a traveller, there can't be a path. So you have to disappear for the path of meditation, the path to enlightenment to manifest. The more you're there, controlling, driving the meditation, the more the path vanishes. But as you disappear, by letting go, by being passive, just watching, and not being the great me, the more the path
manifests, becomes clearer, wider and easier to travel. So it's letting go of the self, especially that self which controls and does. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. Which means when there's no traveller, the path is there. It's a beautiful saying. Okay, so there we go. A bit of overtime today, but that's the last Saturday afternoon which the monks and nuns will be teaching for 3 months because we're going on holiday. Yep. And the holiday is a 3 month range retreat, as many of you know. We'll still be down at Serpentine. The nuns will be at Kitigana. We can always come and visit us and ask questions on meditation. And in the meantime, the Saturday afternoons will be still happening, but run by a volunteer, highly experienced lay teacher. So happy meditating. You can see after 3 months, and all the monks and nuns, they come up with their halos more brilliant and more shiny. We're going to shine up our halos. They cleanse their minds, they re-energize their power source. Okay, so I'm going to bow 3 times. You can join me if you wish. Then we can go and do what we need to do.